The following live presentation by Rabbi Benny Friedman is brought to you by Israelite, inspiring a renaissance in Jewish living. To learn more about Israelite, please visit our website at www.israelite.org. Additional contact information is available at the end of this presentation. Thank you for learning with Israelite and enjoy the experience.
So this is one of the brachot under the chuppah. Okay? Sameach to Samach Reim Ahuvim. Right? That you should be of joy, of so much joy. Beloved friends, best friends. That's what Judaism calls a chatan and kala, bride and groom. They should be best friends. Right? And the question is why? Why is it that simcha is associated so much with a wedding? You know, if you go to a bris, right? There's no mention of simcha at a bris. Now you could think of all sorts of ideas as to why that is, but you would think a new baby is born, you know, after the bris itself. Like, no. So the question, of course, is what is simcha? What is joy? What makes a person happy? What does it mean to be happy? You know? So I'll tell you an interesting thing. Imagine you meet a guy, right? Okay, when I was dating, met a girl, thought she was the right girl. I thought she was an amazing girl, you know, a wonderful girl. I thought, wow, this is serious, you know? Maybe you're going out for 3 months and you never went out with a girl for 3 months, so you're sure this must be the right girl. You tell your parents maybe you met the right girl, right? And you're floating around on cloud nine, you know, tripping over poles and banging into trees and whatever it is. And then one day, this girl, right, you know, out of the blue, she dumps you. So you're crushed, right? This is like the end of the world. And you walk around Nebuch for 3 months like a puppy dog, right? But then you meet another girl. And this other girl, she's amazing. And not only, you know, have you never gone out with a girl for 6 months, but this girl, I don't know, she even likes the New York Knicks. Like, what are the chances? I mean, that's unbelievable, right? That's a basketball team. So, because there are people from England, right, who play silly sports, right? They run after a ball and they finally get it and they kick it away, go figure, right? Okay, so, but then, you know, 6 months go by and you think this is the right person and maybe this time you tell your brothers this could be the right girl and then one day, you know, right, she dumps you. And this goes on and on. You know, you meet people and sometimes they dump you and sometimes you dump them. It's like a big dump-a-thon, right? And then one day you actually meet that person. You actually meet that person with whom you want to share the rest of your life. And by the way, finding that person is not so complicated as much as people think it is, you know? First of all, people make a mistake because they think that you're trying to find the right person. It's not true. You're trying to become the right person. If you become the right person, then the right person will find you, right? And the recipe for what you need in a person is not so complicated. You need somebody you can respect, someone you can trust. You have to have some chemical attraction. You have to share the same dreams, more or less. And you have to both be willing to work. It's that simple. Nothing else. If you find that in another person, marry them. It's that simple. You'll make it work. And one day you find yourself standing under a chuppah, right? And it's one of the most amazing experiences you could ever have. To actually know that you're with the right person. In fact, I even remember I met my wife, by the time I met Dorit, I knew already what I was looking for. And Baruch Hashem, she knew what she was looking for. And Baruch Hashem, she decided it was me. That worked out well for me. But I met her on Thursday night, more or less. And Tuesday night, this is like 4 days later, I was completely smitten. I was so smitten, I wasn't going to even play the I'm not smitten game. This was a waste of time. It was too obvious. And I remember we were sitting down talking somewhere, and she looks at me and she says, I want you to know that I know we're going to get married. Right? Okay? Right? And then she says, and I want you to know that you know we're going to get married. She says, when you know that you know, let me know. And I didn't run, which was how I knew. So you're standing under a chuppah, right? And I was ready to get married like a week after I met her, but you know, parents, they gotta come, be here for the wedding, whatever. So we met at the end of June and we got married in January. And you're standing under the chuppah and you think like, thank God I didn't make all those mistakes, right? Like, thank God I didn't marry that one or that one or that one because this is the right one, right? Right? No. See, you're standing under the chuppah, you suddenly realize that none of those experiences were mistakes. They were all part of what you needed to experience to become who you were meant to be able to find who you were meant to be with. And that's simcha. Simcha is when the whole journey makes sense. Simcha is all about purpose. The things in life that bring you simcha are things that bring you purpose. That's why a person who has joy, they can jump out of bed. They can live under the most adverse circumstances and still be happy. On the other hand, people get depressed, can't get out of bed, because what's the point? Depression is when there's no purpose. In fact, I'll let you in on a little secret. If you find during the course of the year, for whatever the reason, that you're struggling with some level of depression, you know, it happens, especially happens in the old city, you know. Winter, stone walls, and dark alleyways. Yeah, that'll do it, right? If you have a moment like that, and you probably will, understand that that's related to your perception of what's the purpose. You know, you won't have a moment like that if you're so into your learning, if the sheer you just went through blew your mind. You can't be depressed because that's why you're here, so there's purpose to it. So if you have an experience like that where you're having a tough time, you're a little depressed, all you need to do to fix that is to find some purpose. Right? Most people, they get depressed about learning, so they run away from the Beis Medrash. But the Beis Medrash is the cure. If you run back there, you find something to learn that actually gives you purpose, then you'll cure your depression. You know, that's just a side point. So that's why under a chuppah we sing this thing. So listen to how it goes. Okay, it goes like this. Okay? Some, you know what, we'll forget the words for now. We'll just do the niggun, okay? It goes like this. Ay, nai, 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 nai. Try that. Ay, nai, 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 nai. Then it goes. Ay, nai, 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 nai. Ay, nai, nai, nai. Try that. Ay, nai, 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 nai. Try that. Ay, nai, 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 ay, nai, 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 ay, nai, 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 ana, nai, 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 nai. Ay, nai, 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 na, na, nai, nai. The second part goes like this. Ana, nai, nai, nai. 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 Ana nai nai nai, ay nai 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 nai, na na nai nai, ay nai 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 nai, ay nai nai nai, ay nai 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 nai. Ay, nai, 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 ana, nai, 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 I hope him kiss a mecha yet irha eganeiden mikede ananai nai nai. Ya na 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 na, ya na 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 na, ya na 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 na, ya na 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 na.
na 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 Samach Reim Ahurim Kesamei Chacha Yetzircha Egan Eden Mikeden Na 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 na
challenge you to sing that nigga without smiling. All right. So I have a friend, CB, and we've been friends since we were like 10 years old. And that's like, you can do the math, that's about 35 years. You don't get that many friends like that. You know, that aren't related to you and that you stay that close for that long. So, you know, we don't live that near each other. He lives out in Sham near Tel Aviv. But every once in a while we get together, we get to talk. And about 5-6 years ago, he was on Miluim. He came to Israel after I did. He joined Golani. He had already done college. And the hardest part about the army in this country is definitely reserve duty. Anyway, you may remember that in 2001... there was a terrible bombing at the Park Hotel in Netanya. Do you remember this at all? Terrible, terrible story. A lot of people were killed. I think 23 people were killed. It was in the middle of Leila Seder. And that was like the straw that broke the camel's back. And the Israeli army decided enough was enough. And they basically went in. They went into Jenin, to Shechem, to Aza. And he was on Miluim. He was called up as part of this Mifta. A lot of people were, and he ended up in Jenin. And you may remember that there was a story back then of a Nachal unit that was almost completely wiped out, like 15 guys were killed. Do you remember the story? Maybe some of you know. So that was that same year, and that's where he was doing patrols. Now, he's an interesting character because he's like, he's a cross between a rightist and a leftist. And on the one hand, you do reserve duty, and you see, unfortunately, what our enemies do and what they teach their children to do. So it makes you hard, you know? On the other hand, he came from America, whatever, so he has like a certain side of him that, you know, we should be able to make peace with the Arabs. It's ridiculous. So he had this little like peace movement that he brings with him in his duffel bag whenever he goes to Milan. What he does is he brings bags of candy. And whenever he does like patrols, he gives out candies to the Arab children. And he does this, so he tells me, because he figures, at least, you know, all the garbage that they're teaching these children, at least they'll meet one Israeli soldier, and maybe, who knows, maybe sometime they'll have an opportunity to do something dumb or dangerous. And they'll remember that, you know, not all Israeli soldiers are like that. So that's his little peace movement. Now, because he does this, so when he goes on reserve duty, by the second or third day, all the kids recognize him. And they run after him, these little Palestinian kids, you know, to get candies, whatever it might be, right? Anyway, one day he's doing patrol. It's like a week into his milim. And they're on patrol sort of in the alleyways of Jenin. And this was a hotbed of terrorism, of Hamas. And he's walking along on patrol, a 12-man patrol, the officers all the way in front. And this little Arab kid sees him and comes running over to him. And he starts grabbing his sleeve. La, 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 la. Now, he was on patrol. Like, it's one thing to give out candies when you're, like, in the Shin Gimel, like, in the guard, you know, duty in the base, or when you're... But on a patrol, like, that's serious, you know. So he's like, you know, go away, whatever. Like, I'm on a patrol. But this kid doesn't let him go. So he reaches into his pockets, right? And he figures he has some candy. He has some candy there. So he took out a candy, gives it to this kid, figures he'll go away. The kid looks at the candy, 4 or 5-year-old kid, right? And throws it on the ground and starts pulling Stevie's arm. La, 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 la. Right? There's like an alarm bell that goes off somewhere in the distant part of his brain. You know, like there's like the massive alarm bell that goes off, like the alarm clock that goes off that you jump out of bed. But then there's like, you know, sort of like the alarm that's like in the distance, like you're in deep sleep and you can barely hear something, like you haven't sort of recognized that it's an alarm clock, but later you'll realize that you were already hearing the alarm clock. It's like one of those alarm bells. Like, he thinks this is a little odd. Like an Arab kid, 4 or 5 years old, to throw a candy down, like he doesn't understand. Right? He doesn't understand Arab culture, he's an American. But he figures like something's off. Something's off here, and he looks through, and he doesn't see anything, but, you know, like, why would the kid be pulling him? So he walks over to his officer, but he doesn't quite know what to say to him. Like, what do you say? There's a little 4-year-old kid who didn't want a piece of candy. I think we should think about this. Like, that's just a weird thing to say. But he just feels like he should say something. So he walks over to his officer, he goes, you know, Tshma, I don't know quite how to say this, but, so he describes what happened. Of course, the officer has already noticed, like, you know, they're in the reserve duty together, so he knows CB's little candy game. So he looks at this kid, looks around, and now the officer is hearing alarm bells. And it's also like he can't quite put his finger on it. He looks around and he realizes they're heading into this like maze of alleyways. So he decides, you know what? This is a good time to be smart. So he calls into the Chamal of the Gdud, the battalion HQ, and they pass the message along to Brigade HQ, and they basically ask for a couple of Chablanim, a couple of like sappers, guys who deal with bombs and whatever, booby traps, because maybe there's something waiting for them. They have to sit there for like half an hour until the sappers get there. When they check out the alleyway that they were about to go into, they find that this alleyway is booby-trapped from head to toe. Claymore mines, grenade quick releases, everything, you wires, like all across the alleyway. They were about to walk into a death trap. This was, by the way, 2 days before another unit experienced a very similar experience. Right? And in the end, they were able to desap all the mines, etc. Do you understand this? Do you understand that this chayal, this whole unit... My friend has 3 kids. In fact, his twins weren't even born yet. And this Friday night, he'll sit down at his Shabbos table with his family. He'll give a bracha to his children because some 4-year-old Arab kid threw a piece of candy. Do you understand this? Right? There's an amazing pasuk from Tehillim. Right? It says, Yehi shalom b'chelech. Right? You know this nigga, right? Yehi shalom b'chelech. Shalva b'amonotayach. Okay? Do you ever think about that? Do you know what that means? There should be peace amongst your armies, right? And shalva is like, it's hard to describe what shalva is. Shalva is like, I don't know, they have a slang word in Hebrew, zula, serenity maybe. Serenity in your palaces. So the Gra asks an interesting question. If you have peace, what do you need armies for? What does it mean there should be peace amongst your armies? It should say that there'll just be peace. See, an army represents that there's something worth fighting for. You know, sometimes you get peace, but peace is not the goal. Peace is just a vehicle. It's a vehicle to do other things. If we get peace and we forget what we're fighting for, we miss the whole boat. You know? Maybe someday we'll put aside all our nonsense. Shalom be.
chelech shalva Ne'am notayi Oyi shalom Be'chelech 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 shalva Ne'am notayi
specialist at writing songs that never end. So I'll tell you an amazing story. This is an amazing story. There's a fellow, you may have heard of him. He's become somewhat of a legend in Israel. His name was Emmanuel Moreno. And he grew up in a whatever national religious Datilumi environment, whatever that means. And when he finished yeshiva, I think Nechalim, he went to Eli. You know what Eli is? Eli is a mechina, kedam tzvayit. Boys go there because they want to do the army, they want to do serious army, but they want a year to learn and prepare for the army. And he was very inspired in Eli, became very close to Rav Saddam, but he chose a career in the army. But he was one of those rarest of officers who can be in yeshiva even when you're in the army. In fact, his wife said of him that he used to carry two svarim in his uniform pockets. One of them was Shmirat HaLashon. You know, the army, there's a culture in the army where you kind of forget, you know, that you're still, you know, a Lachic Jew. And one of the first things to go is Lashon Hara. Like, it's very easy to talk Lashon Hara. You talk about this Chayal, that Chayal, and you complain about your forgetting. He was very, very makpil on Lashon Hara. And the other sefer he used to carry with him was a Mesilat Yesharim, Ramchal. It's hard to explain what it means that there's an officer in the army who walks around with Shmiras HaLashon in his pocket. That's just a mind-boggling thing. Anyway, last summer during the war, they were up in Lebanon, and they were actually getting set to go on a mission. Okay? And there's a process that you go through before you set on a mission, where you basically go through with your chayalim what's called dapa'ot. A dapa is a derech pulaif sharit. You want to think of all the different possibilities. Right? You're taking your unit in. What happens if if your machine gun jams? What happens if the Hezbollah position you're trying to take out isn't exactly in the coordinates you think they are? What happens if there's a second machine gun you didn't think of and they open up on you from the left? What happens if we get hit from behind? What happens if you get the order to withdraw but you're in the middle of Shetach Patuch? You have to think of all these different things. Because when you're under fire and you're in the thick of it, you don't have time to think about what you're going to do. So before a mission, you think of every possibility and you do it again and again and again so that it becomes instinct. So this is go time. They're about to get into the helicopter. They were actually on a mission to, I forget if it was to Binj Bel, I think it was much deeper in. There was intelligence that the Nedarim, the MIAs who were taken, you know, Golwasser and Regev, whatever, were being held in a particular hospital, in Baalbek, near the Bekaa Valley. And so they were getting ready to get in the helicopter. And he had basically exhausted all the dapa'ot. All different possibilities for, you know, what could be. And then he took it to the next level. He looks at his officers, particularly his second in command, none of whom have, you know, a kippah on their head. And mind you, he's in the elite recon unit of the Israeli army. Okay? His unit is such a secretive unit, it's called Sayeret Matkal, that to this day, they've never published his picture in the paper. Because he's been on so many missions in so many places over the border, that if they would see his face, they would recognize other faces, right? So it's... So he looks at the men and he says, okay, so you're up in the helicopter and your helicopter gets hit by an anti-aircraft missile. Now mind you, this is a week after a helicopter was shot down, you may remember, by an anti-aircraft weapon. In fact, the pilot of the helicopter was a cousin of mine, Danny Gomez. So this was a very serious question. Like, getting in a helicopter to the mission had just become a much more dangerous affair. So you're in a helicopter, you get hit by a missile. And you know with absolute certainty that you're falling to your death, right? There are no ejection seats in helicopters. There's no parachutes. What do? You have 5 seconds left to live. What do? So his deputy commander looks at him and says, I don't understand the question. What do you mean, what do I do? He just said, we're going to die, right? I guess I would close my eyes and hope that it was painless. Then he looks at his commander and he says, what would you do? So Emmanuel looks at him and he goes, what do you mean? I would say the Shema. So his deputy says, what do you mean you would say the Shema? I don't understand that. Like, if you tell me, you know, that you're not sure if you're going to die, so then I understand, you say the Shema, maybe Hashem, you know, maybe God will save you. But you just told me you're for sure going to die. You're hurtling to your death in a helicopter, 5 seconds above the ground, it's over. What's the point of saying Shema? If you believe in God, you don't need the Shema. And if you don't believe in God, you're not going to find it now. So what's the point? So Manuel Moreno looks at him, he says, you don't understand. If it's been determined that you have 5 seconds left to live, if you don't think that you can fill that 5 seconds with meaning, then that calls into question whether the rest of your life was meaningful. But if you understand that even if you only have 5 seconds left to live, that Hashem has given you 5 seconds and that you can change, you can have meaning in that 5 seconds, then your whole life is full of meaning. I want you to know, ever since I heard this story, I've been thinking about this story. I've been processing it. Do you understand? About 6 hours later, 5 hours later, Emmanuel Moreno was killed on their way back from this mission. It was one of the last things he said. It was one of the last things that the men remember of him. Can you understand? You're about to get in a helicopter. You're about to go into Lebanon. can't tell you how many different missions I've been on. I was a lieutenant, a company commander. It never occurred to me to ask a question like that. And I want you to know that that is the secret of Shabbat. Do you know what the secret of Shabbat is? Shabbat is all about learning how to be in the moment. And you watch people sometimes in this world, they are so busy trying to get to the next moment, they don't appreciate where they are. You ever have a meeting with somebody and you realize you're not just you and him, you're him, his BlackBerry, his laptop, his mobile phone, his pager, his mother. That culture, by the way, the one that you're hearing outside, they know how to be in the moment. They have a lot of patience. You know, it's kind of like when you dance. You ever go to a wedding, right? You dance in circles. Nobody dances to get to the last step. You dance to enjoy the dance. 6 days a week, people misunderstand that pasuk. They think that means 6 days a week you can do whatever you want. 6 days a week you can do what you want, but the seventh day you're not supposed to work. That's not what it means. 6 days a week, Hashem says, I give you a world. What are you going to do with it? But on the seventh day, you get a chance to get off the ride. So what's all that running around for? And make no mistake about it, if you're spending a year learning, that's an intense experience. One day a week, you step off the ride, and you get to ask yourself, so what did I do this week? And why am I doing this? And how is my life different now than it was at the beginning of the week? That's the secret of Shabbat. Just to learn how to be in the moment. Tishamu b'nei Yisrael el ha-shabbat el ha-sot et ha-shabbat le-dotam Shamu uvenei Yisrael et ha-shabbat el ha-sovavot et ha-shabbat lidotam thank you. So I got a question for you. You've been here what? Some of you a month, some of you 6 months, right? Southern Hemisphere girls, like since February, right? You know, right down here are the steps. They go down to the Kotel. Okay? Is it safe to say that everybody here has walked down those steps at some point? Yeah? Right? Okay. What's the name of that street? Nope. Nope, nope, nope. Is Gavladach is the street here. That's very impressive. Is Gavladach is the street here, right? But if you walk out of Israelites building, and you hit Miz Gavladach, and you make a left, and you make another left, you're walking down the steps, what's that street called? Now, by the way, that you could make a case for saying that that street is one of the most important streets in the Jewish world. Because that's the street that takes you to the Kotel. That's the street that takes you to Har HaBayit. And by the way, that street existed as a street 2,000 years ago during Beit Sheni. That's a pretty important street. It's not the same street, it was underneath, but okay. What's the name of that street? By the way, just as an aside, another aside, this is one of our problems. We spend so much time trying to get there, we don't stop to appreciate where we are. Right? If I ask you where Oxford Circle is, you'd know where that is, if you're from England. If I ask you where Broadway is, you'd know where that is, Fifth Avenue. What's the name of the street? Street of the Kotel? Nobody knows. It's unbelievable to me that nobody knows. But okay, now you'll know. Anybody? What? This street is called Ma'alot Rabbi Yehuda Alevi. Okay? Ma'alot, you look, you'll see I'm right. Ma'alot Rabbi Yehuda Alevi. So I got a little curious. Why is this called Ma'alot Rabbi Yehuda Alevi? Now don't get me wrong. Rabbi Yehuda Alevi was an important perush. He wrote the Kuzari. He was actually one of those rarest of individuals whose tzionut, you know, we have this image of the Zionist, right? You know, he's got this covered temple on his hat. He's got like a Sten gun in one hand and a plow in the other, and he's clearing the swamps against malaria, right? I'll give you a different image of a Zionist. Right? Rabbi Yehuda Levi was a late Rishon. He was one of the Gedolei Ador in medieval Europe. He was famous for saying, Hineni b'marav, ach libi b'mizrach. I am in the West, my heart's in the East. And he decided to live his dream, and he went to Israel. He didn't go to Israel like you and I went to Israel. He got on a plane. You know, he didn't get like a Jewish agency subsidy. He had to travel by donkey through medieval Christendom. Do you understand this? He gets to Israel. He can't even find anybody to go with him from the port city of Akko to Jerusalem. And not only that, but he actually gets there. And according to legend, right, he reaches these hills right here, not far from here, overlooking the old city. So he's an important parish, I understand. He's a poet. But why is the street named after Rabbi Yehuda Levi? I mean, call it Moshe Rabbeinu. Call it Avram Avinu. Call it David HaMelech Street. So I got curious about this. Then I found out that there's a Beis Medrash, the ruins of which, it was a flourishing Beis Medrash until 1948, when we lost the Jewish quarter to the Arabs, and the mobs destroyed this Beis Medrash, this yeshiva, and it's called the Beit Midrash of Rabbi Yehuda Levi. So I thought, that's why it's called Rabbi Yehuda Levi Street, because Rabbi Yehuda Levi's Midrash is on the street. The only problem is there can't be, because this yeshiva was built in the 1700s. Rabbi Yehuda Levi lived in the 14th century. So I got curious. So I'll tell you what I think. I don't know this to be true, but I'll tell you what I think. I once read an amazing story. And you may not believe this, but I'm actually a shtickle skeptic when it comes to these types of stories. I was so blown away by this story that I actually checked it out. I went to Har Herzl, found the grave. I believe this to be a true story, but you know what? If it isn't a true story, so it should be a true story. Okay, maybe one day it'll be a true story, fine. This is a story about a fellow named Chaim Shapiro. Chaim Shapiro lived in Czechoslovakia before the war, went through the 7 levels of hell. He started the war with 8 children. The Nazis murdered 7 of his children in a little over a year. He went from the ghetto to Auschwitz. He survived the war with 1 son. Can you imagine? Baruch Shapiro. And after almost 3 years in the DP camps, you know, we don't appreciate this. We think the war was over in 1945. The war wasn't over in 1945. There were hundreds of thousands of Jews who were wallowing in misery in the same camps that were concentration camps, except now they had blankets and they had some food and they had British guards instead of, or French guards instead of Nazis. Their liberation would be our worst nightmare, believe me. You wouldn't get any students to come in those kinds of dorms. After almost 3 years, they finally managed to sneak aboard one of the illegal immigrant ships, running the blockade against the British. Israel is fighting a war of independence. We're outnumbered 15 to 1. They're taking every able-bodied volunteer they can find. And Baruch Shapiro volunteers to fight. Right? They came ashore south of Haifa. They waded ashore, you know, sort of under cover of darkness. They basically gave him a rifle, a few bullets. They took him to a ravine. They taught him how to shoot. And off he went to war. And Chaim Shapiro, the father, he, with some Jewish agency and joint money, he went to rent a small apartment near Tel Aviv. Baruch Shapiro actually distinguished himself in battle. He fought under Yitzhak Rabin as part of the Palmach and then the early vestige of the IDF in the battle to liberate Jerusalem. You know, Yerushalayim was then under siege. There were 80,000 Jews. They were completely surrounded. And these convoys broke the blockade and kept Yerushalayim Jewish. He so distinguished himself in battle that he received a field commission. He was made an officer without officer's course. One day, Chaim Shapiro is sitting in his little apartment. And he sees one of these delegations. You know, they're walking up the steps to his apartment. You know, I never understood this story. I want you to know, until my mother told me a story. When in the summer of, I think, 84... So my brother and I were both in the army at the same time, right? We grew up in New York. When I turned 18, I came to Gush. After a couple of years, I decided I fell in love with the country. I went to do the army. So there was one summer, like 6 months or so, we were both in Lebanon. He was in Sidon and Tzir HaMavet in south of Beirut, and I was in the Bekaa Valley opposite the Syrians. And my parents decided there was just no way they were going to sit in New York while we were both, you know, sort of. So they had an apartment in Yerushalayim, in the building on stilts above the Super Soul, if you know where that is. And one day my mother kind of comes downstairs and she's going to go shopping. And as she's going shopping, she sees one of these delegations. They're walking up the walkway to her building. It's hard to describe this. You know, we used to see them once in a while in a war. There's always a kabban, a ktzin briut nefesh, an army psychiatrist. There's usually a medic or a nurse. One of them is carrying that horrible brown envelope. And it's like death is walking down the street. People just stop. Cars stop and stare at them. My mother sees this and her heart stops. She's got not one, she's got 2 boys on the front lines. And there's a delegation coming up to her building, you understand? And she doesn't know what to do. She doesn't have the guts to ask them. But she can't very well go shopping knowing they're going into her building. So she gets back into the elevator with them. She told me that the longest moment of her entire life was the amount of time it took this army nurse to lift her finger and stop at the 5th floor. They were going to the Bar Kokhba's instead of the 6th where she lived. They say Chaim Shapiro looked out his window. He saw this delegation and he just knew. They say he opened the door before they knocked. They say he never even opened the envelope. He just crumpled it over and over in his hands. Can you imagine? What Hitler didn't finish ended with an Arab bullet on the road up to Yerushalayim. That's it, right? I mean, the end of a story. End of a line. He had only one request. You know, the army does everything. They take care of the funeral. He wanted his son to be buried in Har Herzl in Yerushalayim. Have you been to Har Herzl? Right? Wanted his son, so if you go into Har Herzl, you can actually find his grave all the way down on the right in the section of Tashach. Wanted his son to be buried in Yerushalayim. His son had actually never made it to Yerushalayim. He wanted him at least to be buried there. This is the middle of a war, but because of the nature of this story, people heard this story. 300 people showed up to the funeral. Yigal Yadin himself, who was the chief of staff of the Israeli army, he would later discover Masada, stood by Chaim Shapiro's side. They bring out the casket, the coffin, the Aron, draped in an Israeli flag, and they start to lower it into the ground. And Chaim Shapiro starts to sing. So people thought Nebuch, you know, he lost it. I mean, everybody knew the story. This was his last child. This is a whole line of the Shapiro family. That was it. So Yigal Yadin put his arm around him, and somebody went to get a cup of water, and someone went to get a chair, and he shrugs them all off, and he finally says, "You don't understand." He says, "I lost 7 children. I lost my wife. I lost my parents. I lost my in-laws. I lost almost 70 relatives in a little over a year." He says, "I have no idea why they died. And I have no place to mourn them. They're dust over Europe." He says, "But this son, at least I know why he died. He has a grave in Yerushalayim. And he died so that we could have a state of Israel." He said, "That's not a reason to cry. That's a reason to sing." And he starts to sing. And he grabs people's arms. And they start to dance. As the sun sets over a flag-draped Aron on Har Herzl in Yerushalayim, 300 Jews at a military funeral begin to dance. You want to know why this street is called Rabbi Yehuda Levi Street? Rabbi Yehuda Levi came here in the 14th century, and he got this close, but he never made it to Yerushalayim. According to the legend, he was cut down by a crusader who saw him crying over the old city. And Rabbi Yehuda Levi came to symbolize all those Jews who dreamed of coming but could never make it here. I think maybe they called this Ma'alot Rabbi Yehuda Levi for all the Jews who dreamed about coming back to Yerushalayim but never made it. For 2,000 years, we have been dreaming of coming home. Do you understand? What percentage of Jews in history get to do what we're doing? To be in Yerushalayim, to be in the Old City, and to spend a year learning Torah. That's unbelievable. You got to pinch yourself. You know? That's not a reason to cry. It's a reason to sing. So we'll make this our last niggun. Because you got to go, we got to go. We're neighbors, you know. Anytime you're in the neighborhood, you want to come by. Give you one last thing to think about. Hope you know this niggun. This is an unbelievable song. Two years ago, in the middle of the Hitnatkut. You know what the Hitnatkut is, right? The disengagement, right? So they kept doing these rallies down in Kfar Daram and down opposite Aza. And you know, we all went to the rallies and some did more and some did less. 50,000 Jews, not a small thing. And I kept thinking to myself, this is such a mistake. Like they're preaching to the choir. All the Jews who... Finally somebody figured this out and they did a rally in Tel Aviv, in Kikar Rabin. And 250,000 Jews showed up. 250,000, some estimate as much as 400,000 Jews were at this rally. To stand in the presence of 250,000 Jews is an awesome thing. It's a privilege. And at one point, Ofer Cohen's wife gets up to speak. Ofer Cohen was actually a fellow that I did some programs with. There was a terrible story a good number of years ago in Aza. Terrorists blew up a roadside bomb underneath a bus, blew up the bus. His three of his children who were sitting on the bus, were all injured terribly. They ended up in two separate hospitals undergoing amputations on the same night. Okay, all three of them lost a leg. One of them also lost an arm, I think. And this couple had such unbelievable emunah. And they became known in the news. Like they were interviewed. And I remember watching an interview of him and his wife. And, you know, they asked them, are you going to stay in Gush Katif? And, you know, they asked the children. And the children said, you know, Dafka Ken. And we want to stay. And this is our home. Or whatever. But no anger. No kas. No, just unbelievable. So this woman got up to speak at the Hitnatkut, right? At this rally. And she was talking and you could hear the tears brimming. And at one point she says, you know, my biggest question, because we told our children, you know, to them in wheelchairs, that, you know, we don't have to stay till the end. I mean, we'll go somewhere. They wanted to stay. What do I say to the chayal who comes to be mefaneh to remove my son from his wheelchair? When my son says, as he's already told me he's going to say, I'm not walking out, I'm not wheeling out. If you want me to leave my home, you're going to have to carry me out. What do I say to the soldier? What do I say to a chayal Yehudi who does that? Like, forget about the issue, should they use the army, not like the pain. And she started to cry. I tell you, 250,000 Jews, there wasn't a dry eye in the place. It was unbelievable. And then over the Ramkulim, they started to play this niggun. And I want you to know, I've been processing this for a couple of years. You think about this. The pain of that moment was not that we gave up a portion of Eretz Israel. Okay, that's painful. Nah. It's not even the Jews were forced to leave their homes. I mean, it's a terrible thing. But that's not what makes me... That's not the biggest tragedy. It's not even that Israeli soldiers had to remove Jews from their homes. Nicha, okay, it's a terrible thing, but Baruch Hashem, there's no bloodshed. The saddest thing is all the Jews who didn't care. The people who they interviewed the day of the Hitnatkut on the beach in Tel Aviv, somebody wanted to do a different kind of story, and they didn't know what the interviewer was talking about, and didn't bother them. That's the pain. You know why it was called the Hitnatkut? Right? Everything that comes to you in your life comes as a message. Baal Shem Tov says, if you see somebody being Mechalal Shabbat, don't think your message is you're supposed to scream Shabbos. It means there's a pagam, there's something off with your Shabbat, you have something you need to work on. Everything is a message. And if that's true for individuals, and by the way, imagine what a world it would be if we all thought that way, then it's certainly true for a nation. A nation that experiences a Hitnatkut experiences it because they're minutak. We're cut off from each other. We've stopped being with each other and caring about each other and getting to know each other. So while you're here this year, you have this awesome opportunity to become the person you're meant to be, so that wherever you end up, wherever you go, whether it's here in Israel or back somewhere else, you can make a difference and break down those walls of Hitnatkut. So this is the niggun that they sang. I'm sure you know this. I hope you know this. If not, I'll teach it to you. Rachem Nashem Elokei Rachem Rachem Yisrael Amecha Rachem Eyal Yerushalayim Yireh Rachem Rachem Oy Rachem Hashem Elokeinu Rachem Rachem Yisrael Mecha Rachem Ve'al Yerushalayim Yireh Rachem Rachem Oy Rachem Tziyot Mishkan Kivodecha Ve'amachu Ben David Meshichecha Ve'al Habayit HaGadol Ve'akadol Oy Rachem Oy Rachem Oy Rachem Mishkan Kivodecha Ve'amachot Medavid Meshichecha Ti'al Habayit HaGadol VeHakadosh Oy Rachem Oy Rachem Oy Rachem Rachem, Rachem Nashem Elokeinu Rachem, Rachem Yisrael Lecha Rachem, Yad Yerushalayim Yirecha. Rachem, Rachem, Rachem.
Yerushalayim Yireh Oyrachem 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 Eyat Ziyot Mishkan Kivahudecha
difficult to finish these things. I want to thank you for coming, because you pulled me away from my laptop and computers and phone calls, whatever it is, and you are definitely an inspiring group of people. And I hope we get to spend a little more time together this year at certain points, B'ezrat Hashem. Hope this gave you a little bit to think about, and you should have just an incredible year. Appreciate every day and every moment. Make the most of it. Love every minute of it. Be depressed when it's over and just do it again, you know? And come visit, you know? We're here at Israelite. More than happy to see you.
This presentation by Rabbi Benny Friedman has been brought to you by Israelite, inspiring a renaissance in Jewish living. To access additional presentations from our online media library, order our best-selling books, or learn more about Israelite programming, including seminars, web-based learning, teleconferences, spiritual retreats, Shabbaton experiences, Israel missions, and leadership training, please visit us at www.israelite.org. That's www.israelight.org. You can also call us in New York at 212-947-4990, or in Jerusalem at country code 972-627-4890. We hope you enjoyed this presentation, and we look forward to learning with you at Israelite.